Welcome to Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott Wolf, Thomas Drantz here with you. I'm filling in for Jamie Dodd this week, who is on the morning show. Thomas Drantz, as always, here in this time slot, also covers the Canucks for The Athletic. Thomas, how are you?
Doing well, buddy. I had a great time at the game last night. It was a game I attended as a fan with my nephew, who was starry-eyed and very excited to be at his first Canucks game, and was a blast. I mean, that part of it was a blast. I will say, well, we can get into it a little more on the whiteboard when we give our takes on the game, but I will say, not that I wasn't aware of it, but there's a big difference watching from ice level,
yeah,
or like row 15 lowers, versus watching from where I typically watch from the press box, you know, with my laptop. Game looks slow from up top, and there's no like action that you lose. When Dakota Joshua took that interference penalty, for example, in the second, like it just occurred at a portion of the wall where I couldn't see what had occurred. You never have anything like that in the press box. And obviously you get a better sense for the speed of the game,
mm-hmm,
down at ice level, but also maybe the lack of it from the Canucks, like the lack of punch. You know, I was sitting in the Utah shoots twice end.
Because you're a big fan.
Yeah. And I saw a lot of Utah. I didn't see a lot of the second period. Yeah. That was on the other side of the sheet. I really did feel like the lack of offensive venom that the Canucks brought to the rink last night almost felt like more oppressive.
Right.
Sitting from where a fan tends to watch the game.
Fair enough. It is Canucks Talk. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. And you can text in on the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and Reno Warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. Dmitry Filipovich, it feels like a Friday because he's going to join us, but it is the opposite of a Friday. It's a Monday because he's going away later this week, so he will join us today at 12:30. That's what's going to happen on the show today, but right now, let's get into the whiteboard.
All right now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is the whiteboard, your daily deep dive into what is up with the Vancouver Canucks, and we start with the headlines. Obviously, the most important one, the Canucks lose 3-1 to the Utah Hockey Clubbers yesterday at Rogers Arena. We kind of talked about it there. You mentioned it there. There was a lack of offensive punch from the Canucks throughout that game. Utah was very fast. They are a very fast team. They had the rest. Yeah. They had the benefit of rest. Canucks were playing on the second half of a back-to-back.
No, but it's the third time we've seen it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It would be one thing if this was an isolated incident. It'd be like, oh yeah, that's, you know, that's fine. The Canucks were the tired team. They didn't have their legs last night. That wasn't what happened. The Utah Hockey Club moved at warp speed relative to the Canucks, and it wasn't just that they generated a couple of like counterattacking looks off the rush, both of which resulted in good Lankinen saves. It was the way that the Canucks struggled to move the puck up ice as a result of sort of the blanket that Utah was able to put all over them through the neutral zone. I thought that was the most obvious factor in what bogged down the Canucks throughout the game. And I do think missing Filip Hedl, especially in, not just in terms of his speed and size, but in terms of his ability to bust through, mm-hmm, that kind of structure.
Yeah. I think
that was a huge factor, man.
Especially apparent late in the game when you're trying to come back and you just, both on the 4-minute power play that we can get into more, but also when you had the goalie pulled, that felt like when it was like, man, they just couldn't enter the zone properly, couldn't set things up. And that's where, to me, it was the most apparent that you were missing the kind of one-man breakout and break in from zone entry machine,
yep,
of Filip Hedl. And that's, we don't know how long he's going to be out. We'll get more into it later, but it was apparent yesterday.
I just thought the fundamental dynamic of that game And I do think the back-to-back played more of a factor as the game went along, because by the time you got to the third, you know, I sort of... Here's the truth. The Canucks pulled one out of the fire against the Flames in that third period. That is not typically what you expect to see from a team on 0 days rest. You know, 17 shots in the third period, still having their legs, and they needed it, right? I mean, we'd be having a very different conversation about how this week unfolded if the Canucks had only beaten the Blackhawks.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? That would have been dire from a Canucks perspective. That didn't happen. They managed to go 500 over a particularly tricky and high leverage portion of the campaign. But not having the lead going into the third, you knew it was going to get dicey. Utah gets one bounce and Cooley capitalizes, right? Like, that's kind of what decides it. But the Canucks, by the second period, I thought, were very clearly being outplayed and by a wide margin. You know, if you go to Natural Stat Trick, for example, through the first 40 minutes of the game, it was 13-7 in scoring chances and 9-1 on high danger scoring chances through the first 40 minutes. And it felt like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was trying to think after the game, what real Canucks scoring chance, not a point shot through traffic, right? Not one where it's a difficult save for Vejmelka because of what the Canucks were doing with Laird traffic, but what high danger scoring chance can I even remember the Canucks recording in the game? And the only one that comes to mind was that Besser chance off the rush that he missed high.
Yeah.
Like, that was it. That was it in terms of a material attacking threat from inside against Utah. And as much as back-to-back hurts, as much as Hedl's absence hurts, like, that lack of offense, that lack of threat of any kind in a game that the Canucks were trailing, especially throughout the third period, man, that is tough. That is a very difficult way to live for this Canucks team. And unfortunately, it's been a refrain that's been far too familiar, with that third period against Calgary standing out as like a major exception, not just across this week, but across multiple months of hockey.
Yes, and you mentioned the 0 days rest. Canucks, by the way, 2-7 now,
yeah,
on the second
that.
Half of back-to-backs this year, averaging 2 goals a game in those games on the second half of back-to-back. So, not great.
One other thing I want to talk about really quickly. A huge factor in that game, they didn't even play all that much, but man, did Utah's fourth line give the Canucks trouble. The size of Stenlund and Bjugstad and former Canuck undrafted UFA signing Michael Carcone.
Michael Carcone.
Good for him, man.
Every time I see him, I'm like, he was part of the Canucks, and he is still playing. Good for him. Michael Carcone and the offensive powerhouse that is Kevin Stenlund.
Well, yeah, Stenlund's actually good.
Yeah.
And Carcone's, honestly, a pretty interesting player. Pretty incredible run for him through his NHL career. The fact that he's managed to, you know, play this many NHL games was wildly improbable. So anyway, that fourth line gave the Canucks all that they could handle, which was too bad, because I actually thought the Canucks handled the Kraus, Stone, McBain line as well as, you know, like, that line can be a huge force in some of these games that Utah plays. I thought they were relatively contained. And then, you know, obviously Dylan Gunther, I thought, could have had a couple goals.
Yeah, he was good.
He was really, really good last night. And yeah, I mean, then we get to the power play.
Yeah.
And that was the other crucial factor, especially with the Canucks trailing. They played 6 minutes and 38 seconds of power play time in that game. 11 shot attempts, so less than 2 a minute. Six shots on goal. And only one high danger scoring chance. They were worth less than half an expected goal, according to Natural Stat Trick, on their 638 of power play opportunities, including a 4 minute double minor penalty. Which, okay, here's the other thing I thought watching that game at ice level. I thought the officiating in that game was awful.
Really?
Terrible.
I know Utah fans were really upset.
They should have been. I thought it was horrible and wildly slanted in the Canucks' favor. I thought there were multiple icings in that third period that Kerfoot clearly beat out, and I was right there. I was like, that's not icing. I thought the Kraus call was an absolute gimme. There was no slash there. There is no penalty on the Kraus pet play. And I thought the Besser double minor was fortunate, but it was caused by Besser holding. Besser hauls the guy down. He still has to be responsible for his stick. It should have been offsetting and then a 2-minute extra penalty for Utah.
I was a little surprised that Besser didn't get anything just because it looked like a play where a penalty would be called.
And the offsetting minor that they called Krause for. Was it Krause? Anyway, no, it wasn't. I don't remember who it was. But after I thought that one was soft, but I want to credit Derek Forbert. Forbert negated the Joshua interference penalty, which I didn't have a good view of in the second period, by throwing a massive hit with the referee's arm already up and causing an overreaction from Utah. So I thought that was a bad call. I didn't think Utah's response warranted the penalty, but I don't want to stop there. I want to credit Derek Forbert, veteran move to amp up your opponent and sucker them into taking a bad penalty in that instance. That was 100% premeditated, smart hockey from a veteran defender who continues, by the way, to really impress me. Look, I know no one wants to hear praise for Derek Forbert on a day that the Canucks lost a 4-point game to the Utah Hockey Club and played a pretty miserable brand of hockey in front of their home fans, so I'm going to stop there. But Forbert continues to just do smart things on every single shift, and that was one of them.
I think he's the most underrated Canuck at this point. If we get to the end of the year and the unsung hero is Kiefer Sherwood, I'm going to be upset.
No, it's going to be Hronek.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's actually a good pick.
That's not a bad pick.
I actually like that pick.
I just, in my heart of hearts, I know it's going to be Kiefer Sherwood.
I think it should be Kevin Lankinen.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good pick,
too. I
love
how you're like, I like your pick, but I'm going to disagree.
I like your pick.
That's better than Kiefer Sherwood.
It's a smart pick. I'm just going to pick the guy who literally saved the Canucks season.
Yeah. Well, but, I feel like we've sung him a lot.
Well, we should.
Anyway.
We haven't sung him enough.
Yeah, I'm just going to say, I for my pick, the most unsung hero of the Canucks season? The fans.
The fans.
Oh, wow. You're a hero.
I'm serious. If the
learn to play the game, gentlemen.
If the fans voted for themselves, by the way, because it is fan vote, right?
Yeah.
If the fans voted for themselves and they were like, we lived through this too.
A bunch of write-in votes for fans.
dude, it's the remember when we retired number 7, 10 years ago?
Yeah,
to the Raptors.
The Chicago, the Seahawks
thing.
Yeah. That was a bad idea.
We bring back that banner.
Yeah, you know what? We made a mistake the first time bringing it down. Let's put it back up. You guys did it.
So anyway, one thing that also I do think happens in hockey analysis on shows like Canucks Talk, which are focused so squarely on one team, right, is we talk about the power play. Rick Tocchet talked about the power play, some of the missed opportunities down low and how feckless the Canucks looked 5-on-4, right? Mm-hmm. Although they did score, of course, 5-on-4, right? The Quinn Hughes point shot goal.
Yeah.
And I think we sometimes fail to give credit to the other team. You know, and naturally, right? We're focused on the Canucks. I just want to shout out, especially because he's from West Vancouver, but I thought the 4-minute minor kill by Utah in the third period, a real standout effort and showing and just some really exceptional work from Alex Kerfoot to disrupt what the Canucks were doing in all three zones, down ice, in zone. That was a pretty gargantuan effort from him and phenomenal play to do it in your home rink, right? Where he's from.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. So I just, as poor as the Canucks were execution wise on that double minor, I thought Kerfoot deserves certainly a tip of the cap from, you know, the city, from fans in the city he's from, because he made that happen to a large extent. And to me anyway, that was one of the more extraordinary penalty killing sequences I've seen live this season. So as much as the Canucks needed to be better, I also thought that was one where it got busted up and a lot of time got wasted in part because of some pretty extraordinary performance from a Utah player.
You mentioned Tocchet. I did want to play this clip from Rick Tocchet yesterday after the game, speaking to media, talking about his frustration level with the power play in that game, especially on the double minor. Arash, do we have the clip? 1 second. Okay, we'll get to it. I'll reg the puck here. I'm going to blame Dom because I saw Dom distracting him in the producer booth.
No, Arash was doing his Trump impression back here.
No, I wasn't. Anyway, go on, please.
Okay, so do we have the taco clip ready? Okay.
Yes,
here's
do.
Rick Tocchet after the game last night.
base.
You go down low, and we have a 3-on-2 or 3-on-1. It's plain as day. It's been told. You know, we're. I will say we're a little frustrated, the coach staff, because when you go hard up high, the puck has to go low. It's you got to make a play. It's there. So, I think we're a little bummed out about that.
They're a little bummed out. The coaching staff is a little bummed out that they weren't able to get the puck down low.
Same.
Yeah, you know what? I was a little bummed out too watching it. I'm not going to lie. 4 minutes of, look, the penalty killing from guys like Alex Kerfoot can be good. But when you have a 4-minute power play with 10 minutes left in the most crucial game of your season for the Vancouver Canucks and you do nothing. What did they get? Total 4 shots on goal, and they were all from the outside, and they didn't really generate pressure that they could build off of after the power play. That was frustrating, and I can understand why Tocchet is frustrated too. I know fans look at this, and they're like, well, if you're frustrated, why aren't you fixing things? But also at the same time, I just don't know if this team right now... A lot of this team right now feels like their offensive approach is... Quinn Hughes shooting from the point and hoping something happens. And I give Quinn Hughes as much opportunity as possible, but I think you need to have plans outside of that, and I don't know if we've seen enough from the Canucks this season.
Yeah, there was a play where Lekker Mackey entered the zone and had some momentum, and he stopped and just kind of dropped the puck back off to Quinn. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, that's probably a smart play for a guy still getting his feet wet in the league, right? Just like if you're a junior member in a senior meeting, right? You're there to listen.
Yeah.
As you learn pretty quickly on your way up in the corporate world. So, you know, I it felt like that to me, and I kind of liked it. I thought it showed some maturity in terms of what you have to do to, but there's also an element to which, like, man, I just want to see a Canucks player that's not Quinn Hughes attack downhill occasionally.
Please.
Yeah. Please.
And there's so that's the thing. There's just so much stopping up and deferring to the point that. That's the thing that I feel can be coached out and just isn't being coached out.
And I thought there were, you know, there was a couple of chances where the Canucks actually did get inside. Besser missed high, Hronek missed high. Like, just no confidence offensively. If you're missing high, that's to me like a team level confidence issue.
So just because we get a lot of like anti-Tocchet, you know, oh, this is Arizona Coyotes,
sure,
you know, rhetoric. Is that a player personnel issue, or is that like a systems issue?
I mean, in terms of missing the net?
Well, just in terms of like deferring to the point and just, you know.
There's no system in hockey that wants to filter offense from the point, from point shots. You know what I mean? Like, it's fundamentally, like, I see it anyway as limited players who don't know what to do to score goals.
Yeah. And Tocchet has been like, frustrated often throughout the season, being like, I don't want this. Stop doing this.
And there's an element to which, like, I do think Tocchet hockey does include prioritizing quality scoring chances over shot volume. I do think there's an extent to which the way that Tocchet wants to limit the vulnerability of his defense off the rush requires buy-in to make relatively conservative puck management decisions. Like, I think those things are true. But here's the fact. People love to bring up the Coyotes record with Tocchet when he, you know, got hired by a team that had Oliver Ekman-Larsson, Nicholas Hjalmarsson, Jason Demers, and Ilya Lyubushkin, and literally no forward talent over the age of 24. And he decided, hey, my best... He also had Darcy Kemper and a bunch of goalies. Hey, my best approach to winning games is to play shutdown defensive hockey, and did so, right? That team was a laundromat. They weren't a real hockey team. Okay? So people love to use that, but here's other things in Tocchet's resume across the last 15 years that people never bring up while saying that he can't coach offense. Number one, hired Adam Oates while working with Steven Stamkos and installed the 1-3-1 on the power play. Like, Oates was his assistant coach. They installed the 1-3-1 while Tocchet was the head coach and materially changed how NHL power plays function across the league over the next 15 years. Like, that decision to install the 1-3-1 and run it through Stamkos on the left point shaped 20 years of hockey tactics, offensive hockey tactics. That was a Tocchet decision as a head coach. Ran the power play that won back-to-back Stanley Cups in Pittsburgh with Crosby, Malkin, and company. And was tasked on the offensive side of the puck, including face-off set plays like the high-low that ultimately resulted in the McDavid overtime winner for John Cooper's Team Canada staff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, which data points matter more to you? Guy found stacked defensive team and decided to play a shell game in Arizona, a team that wasn't serious at all? Or all of those other contributions? Like, how do you weight those? Mm-hmm. You know? For me, anyway, I just think people like to
it's an easy...
ignore the evidence that doesn't match their priors. But I will say this. There's an element to which Tocchet does deserve criticism, for sure. He's responsible for the performance of this team. That's fair to bring up. And if you're disappointed as a fan watching the quality of this team's play in terms of what they generate, how fun it is to watch, how exciting it is to watch, how conducive it is to winning games, especially when they're trailing, and are wildly upset about it and looking for somebody to blame, I say fair enough. That's a completely fair impulse. I just think you're missing the target if you're blaming it solely on Tocchet.
We got to move on quickly here. So yep. Nothing really in the broadsheet. Lineup notes. I do want to get into some Filipino stuff, but we can focus a little bit more on that later in the show, because I think it's kind of a bigger topic and what it means for the Canucks. Also, got a feel for Filipino, and hopefully we'll have an update soon. There wasn't too much of an update from Tocchet yesterday, but we'll get into all of that later. Playoff standings update. So very, very big weekend, obviously, for the Vancouver Canucks. They beat the Chicago Blackhawks, lose to Utah out of town. Here's what happened over the weekend. The Flames lost to the Avalanche on Friday. Utah lost to the Kraken on Friday, a game Utah probably deserved to win, by the way. They had like relentless pressure for the last 10 minutes, but Philip Grubauer made a few key saves.
Yeah, and a really unfortunate puck handling error on the winner.
That led to Kapokako winning or getting the game-winning goal. Also,
fun game, though.
Yeah, it was a fun game. St. Louis Blues win both of their games Saturday, Sunday. You tried to write them off on Friday.
Kind of a wagon.
Yeah. Now they're 7-2-1 in their last 10.
Easiest remaining strength of schedule, 8-6 at home. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think I might have been too early on the Blues. They are cooking.
You wrote them off. They didn't write back. So
100%.
Pregame yesterday, here were the playoff odds according to Dom's model at The Athletic. Canucks pregame had a 62% chance. Flames had 16. Blues at 15. Utah at 12. After the Canucks-Utah game and the St. Louis game, here's where it stands. Canucks at 47%. Blues jump up 6% up to 21%. Utah up to 19%. They had the biggest jump from 12 to 19%. Flames up to 18%, so they jump a couple percent. The biggest drop, obviously, being the Vancouver Canucks dropping 15%.
Yeah, and you've got Winnipeg here on Tuesday, and then you've got a big game again in St. Louis on Thursday. It's going to go a long way to deciding exactly how this shakes out. In terms of the gambling odds to make the playoffs, Canucks plus 150, Calgary Flames plus 250, tied with the St. Louis Blues, who are also at plus 250, the Utah Hockey Club at plus 375. That's how it is shaking out for now in the West, at least according to the betting markets.
And games to keep an eye on tonight. The Flames, on point percentage, they do hold the final wild card spot. Calgary playing in Toronto.
Look at you, buddy.
Tonight at 4:30.
Music to my
You're welcome.
Let's
You're
go.
Welcome. Calgary playing tonight in Toronto.
Language talks.
At 4:30. Game on Amazon Prime, the prime Monday night hockey game. On the other side, Dmitry Filipovich, host of the PDO cast, is going to join us for the PDO report. We'll talk about the wild card races on both sides of the NHL. That's coming up next. It is Canucks Talk. Josh Elliott, Wolf, Thomas Drantz on Sportsnet 650.